You're listening to Valley Edition. Imagine for a moment a trip through the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, a windy road that meanders through dry, golden hills marked by large oaks, granite outcroppings, and the occasional settlement. Now imagine taking that same trip over 150 years ago, and not in a car, but in a coach pulled by six horses. These stage lines played a big part in the history of the Golden State, and they're the subject of a new book called The Stagecoach in Northern California, Rough Rides, Gold Camps, and Daring Drivers by Cheryl Ann Stapp, who joins us now on Valley Edition. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I think most of us have a mental image of what a stagecoach in the Old West looked like, largely thanks to Hollywood. How accurate is that image?
Well, the image of the coach is always, almost always, one of the Concord coach, was a premier coach. There were other types of vehicles, though, mostly in the mining camps, which were, you know, the up high in the hills. They would use something called a mud wagon.
How did they get these coaches to California?
The first coach, a real stagecoach, first coach came to California in 1850, and it was brought around the Horn by ship. Later, though, you know, as all these people of different occupations were storming into California, and some of them were unlucky miners who just decided to pursue the occupation they'd had back home, some of these people were coachmakers. So there were stagecoaches being manufactured in California from the mid-1850s on.
I understand that the stagecoaches not only provided important transportation, but were also a very vital communications link in early California as well. Tell me about that and how the government was involved in supporting these lines.
Well, by tradition in New England, the stagecoach had always carried mail. They were contracted by the post department to carry the mail, and because the post office didn't deliver. Okay. Fundamentally, though, the stagecoach was mass transit for people, but these stage contracts were coveted by stagemen because they were income over and above passenger tickets, and also because this is a very strong indication of their strength and competence, because they had to prove themselves reliable, such as, you know, meeting schedules and fewer accidents than normal, number of towns serviced, and that kind of thing. So they would receive these contracts upon bid and investigation, and also as a courtesy, they delivered newspapers from town to town. There wasn't an AP service at the time, so the delivery of newspapers was so that editors in the next town copy items from the newspaper, you know, arriving from the first town. And, of course, eventually the stagecoach reached every town and mining camp in Northern California. So all of these services combined, you know, people, newspapers, and mail, spread communication and helped foster trade between what was then really far-flung communities.
Largely through the modern-day marketing of Wells Fargo, I think most of us associate the stagecoach in California with that company. Is that an accurate statement or an accurate view? I understand that Wells Fargo was not necessarily in the gold rush, at least at its peak.
They came to California in 1852, which made them kind of a little bit of a latecomer, but they came as an express service. That's what they were in New York. And an express service doesn't haul people. They transport valuables. Well, there were dozens and dozens, like UPS and FedEx are current express services, and they're taking things, not people. So what Wells Fargo did when they arrived, just like most of all the other expresses, and there were dozens of them, who didn't want to invest in, you know, the huge capital expenditures required to run a stage line. So they contracted with these existing stage lines to carry their express boxes. And then Wells Fargo acquired their own stages in the 1860s, mostly because they had a government contract to deliver the overland mail. But in the meantime, though, Wells Fargo, shortly after their arrival, became the dominant express service. They were a very well-managed, well-respected company, and they could afford to be choosy about who they gave these contracts to haul their express boxes. So these stage lines who were chosen were very proud of this fact. And what they did is they lettered Wells Fargo Express on the side of the coaches. So even then, even in that era, many people thought every stage they saw with that lettered on it was a Wells Fargo coach. That's where that comes from, that misconception, as it were, that Wells Fargo owned their own stages early on.
Also, I understand the origins of Wells Fargo in the stage business or in the express business and in California also connects to the origins of American Express.
Yes. Mr. Wells and Mr. Fargo had been in the express business both separately and together for many years, about a decade or so. And in comes a new rival to their services named John Butterfield. And rather than fight him, they joined him. And that's when they formed American Express. Then when Mr. Wells and Mr. Fargo wanted to go to California, this is a booming new market, John Butterfield said no. So they then called together a group of investors, and that's when they established what we know as Wells Fargo.
Indeed, and of course the Butterfield stage itself is quite famous. The southern route from St. Louis to San Francisco included many stops in here in the San Joaquin Valley in places like Porterville and Visalia and Firebaugh. Those were stations along the Butterfield line. Your book focuses more on Northern California, but I think the experience probably of riding in one of those coaches was largely the same whether you were in the San Joaquin Valley or the Sacramento Valley. What would that experience have been like? Can you describe...
I'm sure it was pretty much the same all over, as a matter of fact. It's been described as a test of true endurance for the passengers. It's bone-jarring, it's hot, it's dusty. I mean, those stagecoaches, even a full-bodied coach like the Concord, had open windows at the side of the door. I mean, you could roll down a leather curtain, but that doesn't keep the dust out or the wind out. Mountain routes, which is found in Northern California going into the gold camps, passengers would... They'd be frightened out of their wits every time the coach plunged down a slope or raced over a hairpin turn. And on flat ground, the coach sped along at what could go up to 10 to 12 miles an hour. And this was considered death-defying speeds at the time. The interior was very confining. There's only 15 inches of seating room per passenger. And meanwhile, while all the stage is in motion, it's rocking and swaying because it has thoroughbrace supports, and some passengers got sick. So people came off the stagecoach bruised and shaken quite often, except for the young men who found it exhilarating.
Yet people still paid dearly to have this privilege.
Yes. Yes, stage tickets were expensive.
Was it an especially lucrative business?
Yes, it could be. It cost a tremendous amount of money, as you can imagine, to run a stagecoach. You have to buy the vehicles, buy the horses, pay the drivers, set up all of these relay stations every 10 miles, hire employees for that, find grain, to be transported to these stations for the horses, which meant you had to own wagons Teamsters to drive those wagons. They also, the bigger lines... also had on their payroll veterinarians and harness makers and hostlers and, everything, that would have to do with running that kind of a business. Which is why the express companies didn't want to get into that end of it.
If you just joined us on Valley Edition today, we're talking with author Cheryl Ann Stapp. Her new book is called The Stagecoach in Northern California, Rough Rides, Gold Camps, and Daring Drivers. I want to talk about some of those daring drivers. They not only had to put up with those adverse conditions you were talking about, but also dangerous conditions from threats of another sort, and that would be bandits, people like Black Bart. Tell me about him and maybe some of the other bandits that still have notorious names today.
Well, he's probably the most famous. He's also maybe the most colorful in terms and most successful, certainly in terms of the time he spent doing it and who he turned out to be when they finally caught him. I mean, for 8 years, between 1875 and 1883, he robbed stagecoaches. He held up moving stagecoaches all by himself. And when they finally, not a gang, but he did it alone. And when they finally found him, he turned out to be this 50-ish, very cultured, affable gentleman living in a rented room in San Francisco. But the surprising thing to me when I was doing this research is, the stagecoach from 49 forward hauled millions of dollars in gold out of mining camps down to big city safes. And it took 7 years before... somebody, and this was a gang, it was the Tom Bell gang, either, got up the nerve to hold up a moving coach. That was the first stagecoach holdup, 1856.
Interesting. Did the crime problems become greater later on in the life of the California stages? You mentioned Black Bart. That seemed like more towards the end of the period of the stagecoach in California.
Well, you know, after the Tom Bell gang did this, they weren't successful, by the way. The coach got away with the gold, $100,000 in gold on that particular stage, although people were wounded and one lady was killed in that robbery. Well, 6 months later came the second robbery here in Northern California, and after that it was like a door had been flung open, because stage robberies then averaged, from then on, they averaged two a week during the 1860s and 1870s. And, of course, as stage travel declined somewhat in the 1880s after the railroads, you know, started building tracks all over, it declined a little bit. But stage robberies lasted into the next century.
How long did the era of the stagecoach last? Obviously, the Central Pacific Railroad connects the East and the West with the Transcontinental Railroad. What did that mean for the stagecoach industry? How did it change? And didn't many of these small areas still need to be served by coaches?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the stagecoach ran in California for, let's say, 75 years. This would be 1849 through sometime in the 1920s. We don't know when exactly in the 1920s. Old Shasta State Historic Park has on display a coach that was still in use in 1926, if you can believe that. But it's, you know, the glory days in California ended with the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad in 1869, because the railroad took that staging business on basically the Trans-Sierra roads, you know, the roads that were going from California into Nevada and back. But, of course, the railroad can't go everywhere, so stages were still running until the automobile finally replaced it, because the automobile could go, you know, everywhere the stagecoach went and more. This happened slowly in some areas, faster in others. Nationally, automobiles reached record heights for the first time in 1909 and just escalated from there.
Looking back on this era now in the 21st century, the second decade of the 21st century, what is the legacy of this era of the stagecoach in California, do you think?
Well, I mean, there's obviously the romance. You know, we look back on it from our air-conditioned automobiles and think how much fun it must have been. But what we have really as a legacy are the coaches themselves that are on display at many museums, and also the roads that they used. Portions of Highway 99 going both north and south were old stage roads. 99 South from Sacramento, anyway, was the old stage road to Monterey. The Hennis Pass Road, a Trans-Sierra road, ran the entire length of Sierra County. I'm told it's still drivable by automobile for anyone who's adventurous. And, of course, there's Highway 50. Highway 50 from Placerville, you know, going over the Sierra, follows the old stage road with, of course, modern changes. They've straightened it a bit and so on. But the original road was the Johnson's Pass Road.
That's a very...
Also, we could consider, I guess, old Highway 40, followed the Lincoln Highway. The Lincoln Highway was for automobile traffic, and these people used portions then of the old Dutch Flat and Donner Lake wagon road. So they're still out there.
It's a very interesting story, and it's documented in this new book, The Stagecoach in Northern California, Rough Rides, Gold Camps, and Daring Drivers by Cheryl Ann Stapp. It's available wherever better books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and your local bookseller as well. The book is brand new on the History Press, historypress.net. Cheryl Ann Stapp, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Joe.